Across the Desk with Clement Manyathela on 702.
Okay, on Across the Desk this morning, I have invited Khomotso Modise, who's our colleague from EWN, a journalist with EWN, because she's been covering two important cases right now. The Senzo Meyiwa case and the Dr. Nandi Pamakutumana's case, where she's challenging her arrest in Tanzania. I want her to just get us up to speed with where things are and take questions from you. So what questions do you have about the Senzo Meyiwa case and where it is, and Dr. Nandi Pamakutumana's application in court challenging her arrest? Give me a call now or send me a WhatsApp voice note. To call me, dial 011-883-0702. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. I mean, in the Senzo Meyiwa case, there are a few witnesses that have testified so far, but there's just so much that we still don't know. Was it one gunshot? Was it two? What was the role of the people that were in the house at the time? Currently, there are five men that stand accused of killing him, but there's no clear route to prosecution yet. Khomotso Modise will take your questions on that. And also, on Makutumana's case, I don't know if you heard her lawyers yesterday. She continued to argue that her arrest and subsequent deportation to South Africa was unlawful. In fact, she refers to her arrest as an abduction. She says it was an extradition in disguise. So if you've got some questions about that case as well, give me a call or send me a WhatsApp voice note. Khomotso Modise, thank you so much for making time. You were in Soweto this morning. You are in studio now in Santoni.
Hey.
A little bit of a journalist, I get.
Rafa, for on the road, Clement. We are.
Said, I want to be the journalist to save the world.
National Jude.
Thank you for making time.
Sure.
So, I want us to start with Dr. Makutumana's case first.
Yeah.
Yesterday, there were legal teams making arguments.
Yes.
On both sides of the coin. Just take us through what exactly is she challenging about that arrest in Tanzania?
Okay, so I must say, disclaimer first, our colleague Oren Singh is the one who's been working on the story with a lot more depth. But my understanding from the papers that I read is that she is saying, as you rightly say, this was not a deportation, it was an extradition in disguise. And her lawyers yesterday were essentially arguing that if it was an extradition, it was done unlawfully. Now, we do know that the South African government was under immense pressure to have her back on South African soil with Thabo Bester.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there were steps that had to be taken, and her lawyers are arguing you flouted procedure in the steps that you took in order to bring her back to this country. And I think an important part of this really is that if it was an extradition, the process would look very, very different to what was done. She's questioned things like, why didn't I appear in a court of law in Tanzania. Yeah, if I was some sort of a criminal. Of course, she hadn't been declared a criminal of any sort in Tanzania. That is the argument by the South African government. They say that she was charged and only arrested when she arrived here in South Africa. She's countered this, saying there were police, South African police, clad in uniform who actually arrested.
During her arrest?
During her arrest.
Or after her arrest?
During her arrest. So from the court papers, she's saying during her arrest. And she's saying those police officers did not have jurisdiction to arrest her there.
That's a valid point. I mean, imagine Tanzanian police coming and arresting me in South Africa.
Yes. So we heard from Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi clarifying that, saying there were police who went to arrest her. Mm-hmm. However, when Tanzanian officials refused to hand her over to the South African police, saying this is not how we work in terms of our international relations, you must be handed over to a Home Affairs official, then that chopper that had gone to Tanzania to fetch her came back to South Africa. And that's where we saw the chartered jet that cost us millions to fetch her being sent with Home Affairs officials. They're insisting that was all above the law. However, the courts will now have to rule on whether the process was flouted and whether she was arrested unlawfully. And if so, they're asking that her arrest and her subsequent detention be declared unlawful. And that's why cited in the papers are also the prison that she's been kept in, Corinne Stas, as well as the magistrate that she's appearing before in the Bloemfontein Magistrates Court. That's Magistrate Kabisi. I must say that those two respondents are abiding respondents, which means whatever happens in this case, whether the judge rules in Home Affairs' favor or if it rules in the favor of Makudumana, they will abide by whatever the ruling is.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
So I remember the first briefing we got from the Home Affairs Home Affairs Minister wasn't there. It was the Police Minister and the Justice Minister just after Thabo Bester and Makudumana were arrested. I remember the Police Minister said, because there's a journalist who asked, how was this arrest executed? And the Police Minister said, well, we had our people who were outside the hotel or something, and then they saw them, and then we informed our counterparts in Tanzania, and then these people were trying to cross the border, and by the time we got there, they were arrested by the officials in Tanzania. I think that was the reasoning from the police ministry. So Makudumana's claim is that's not really what happened. The police officers from South Africa were there, but what if they were there, but they were not the ones that executed the arrest? They were just standing by because they're interested in this person making it home. And I suppose that's what the court has got to rule on, right?
Yes.
To what extent do you validate or invalidate the presence of the police based on what they did during the time of the arrest?
Well, this is when law becomes important in this in this instance, you know, to say, to what extent was process flouted? And was there any reasonableness in the flouting of process here? Government is insisting that their arrest was above board.
Yeah.
They're insisting that the only reason why they sent the chartered jet was because Tanzania had refused to hand them over to police. So they're saying police were not part of this process. And this is why Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi has been championing or asking, begging. He said, I am demanding to be added as a respondent. I mean, we've never seen that. A minister saying, take me to court, because he's saying that I, in fact, or my department was at the forefront of this. So you can't have this court matter without me, right? And so, quite frankly, you know, that's when the court needs to decide two things, really. Of course, whether process was flouted or not. But secondly, what would the interest of justice be in this particular matter? So would it be in the interest of justice to, once that is declared, you know, let's say her arrest is declared unlawful, would it be in the interest of justice to drop all charges against her?
Mm-hmm.
Would it be in the interest of justice to declare her arrest unlawful and then still have her rearrested? You know, the courts need to, there's a lot at play here.
Yeah, but that nothing stops the police from, let's say the court on Monday says there were too many irregularities around how this arrest was executed. I declare you free now, my lady. And then she walks out of the Bloemfontein Magistrates Court. Nothing stops the police from,
The Kroonstad Correctional Services.
Nothing.
So I am understanding, I'm hearing that they are preparing another warrant.
Yeah.
This is not confirmed, however. So I'm hearing that another warrant, and it would be in the interest of officials to prepare another warrant of arrest and have her officially arrested in South Africa. I'd imagine they would charge, I mean, we know that she was found, that's according to the Home Affairs Minister, she was found with two passports belonging to Dr. Pashi that we understand that she used to cross the borders from here to Zim and ultimately to Tanzania, which that in and of itself is a criminal offence. And of course, the aiding and abetting charges, I mean, they would still stand.
And that's a serious charge.
Those are serious charges, right? So, I mean, whether or not she was arrested here or in Tanzania, I'm really interested to see what the game plan or the action plan is by her lawyers. You know, from where I'm standing, and this is just me, it seems, you know, it may be in their interest to have her attend this matter outside and not while in police custody. You will remember that she hasn't applied for bail yet. So, I mean, let's say this is declared, her arrest is declared unlawful, but then she is rearrested. Then she would still, I'd imagine, apply for bail. And she has new factors to apply for bail. And I think whatever happens in the High Court in this urgent application will be used quite heavily in her bail application.
Phew. Yeah, this is going to be so interesting. Okay. You've been there. I think you were you the reporter that initially started going to Bloemfontein when they arrived, right?
Yeah.
Help me understand the change in her demeanor. I mean, there was a time she was blocking her face with the mask. She looked very sad. And then, boom, Aussie comes with makeup, blush, What's this?
Makeup and blush can to one.
Oh, is that Clement? The same thing?
Blush is part of makeup.
Blush is the pink thing, ne?
Yeah.
And what are these things you put here?
Lashes, eyelash, eye mascara ink.
Mascara.
Yeah.
These things you put here, it's a fake, is it? Eyelashes, yes. Yeah, that
one. Sharp.
Eyelashes. And then, like, what? And I don't know if, have there been family members there throughout? And what's been her demeanor towards them? The last I checked, she was blowing kisses at them. And what do you make of that transformation from, I'm coming here, I've got my hands in my pocket, I'm blocking my face, and then boom, I come with makeup. And because I've been trying to figure out what's the game plan, because we're dealing here with a woman who may have been the mastermind also. So everything she does is quite strategic.
I don't know. You know, I know that it's easy to succumb to the pressure of wanting to decode everything that she does in court, because, you know, this mysterious
doctor. Do you know
what this
woman was responsible for?
I mean, allegedly. I mean, allegedly. Yeah, it's important for us to say allegedly, right? I mean, for all we know, we've heard people saying she may have been the victim here.
Undies.
You know, but you're right. There's a lot to read from that demeanor. The first time, I mean, when they landed here in Johannesburg at Randburg, I had the biggest FOMO.
Yeah.
I was sitting in a hotel room in Bloemfontein because we'd been there for the bail application of the first three accused.
Uh-huh.
The first two accused, I believe. And so then we got word that they're going to be landing in the wee hours of the morning. And I was stuck in Bloem. And if I could fly...
Mm.
I would have gotten into my, I could say, be my.
Oh, we don't have money for a jet yet.
Flown the whole way to that airport.
Yeah.
But then, of course, then we heard immediately that when she landed here with Thabo Bester, she would be taken to the Bloemfontein Magistrates Court that very morning.
Mm-hmm.
So then my FOMO subsided a bit because, you know, now the action was about to take place in a different place, right? And that was in Bloem. When she made her way to Bloem, she spent a lot of time at the local police station. And I must say that because when people are processed generally, of course, you know, I mean, the processing takes about an hour. We've seen people being processed at police stations before mm-hmm. they appear in the magistrate's court. Really quickly, they take your fingerprints and then you get taken to magistrate's court to appear. It took about 4 hours, three mm-hmm. to 4 hours, where she was being processed. We had no word on what was going on. I mean, we saw, you know, many, many convoys making their way into that police station. We were told that there are MECs that are coming. We were told that there were police chiefs that were making their way. And it was a very, very busy morning. However, you know, I mean, eventually she did make it to the magistrate's court, where she made an appearance alongside another accused. I believe it was Sinue Matswara. And I will check just to make sure. But once she made her court appearance, she'd covered every part of her face. You remember that?
Mm.
Everything was covered. You could barely see her. You could just see her eyes.
Mm.
And even that, she was, you know, her demeanor, face down, teary-eyed. You know, and then two appearances later, I believe, she was completely uncovered.
Mm.
So the next appearance that she made, she had covered her face again. And during that appearance, we remember Magistrate Kabisi telling her from the state, really, after the state made the submission, that how do we know the person who is before the doc is indeed Dr. Nandi Pamakurumana?
Mm.
So it was then up to the courts to ask her to reveal herself, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when she removed the hoodie and she... You know. So then eventually, after that, I think she became extremely emboldened because we started seeing the makeup, we started seeing the new hair.
Yeah.
I mean, better hair than me sometimes. I'm just like...
I'm not in prison.
Right?
But look at your hair.
Yes, you know. And of course, I mean, brilliant work from journalist. I know that Zikona Chona from Newsroom Africa then went on to do some stories about how, you know, the hair salons in prison, which is stuff that not many people know, right?
But who's paying for that? Like, their families pay for that?
No, so my understanding, and this is from, you know, because I've visited prisons for my extra, you know.
Okay, let's not go there. That's not why you're here.
I mean, I've visited prisons
okay,
before. And the inmates I've spoken to, it is almost courses that are offered.
Yeah.
So what would happen is that there would be a salon inside where the prison, I mean, to keep people busy and so that they leave with a skill, you know. I can't believe you.
But I mean, I'm interested in, like, I wonder. And if somebody knows, please let us know.
Yeah.
Because I know that when you're appearing in court, your family can bring you, like, fresh clothes, whatever you need, you know. And I'm interested, though, if we have these salons in prison, is the family going to pay up when you come? Or is it just, hey, show me, do my hair.
Yes.
And then take it from there. And then it's just using your skills. And maybe that is the case. Let me know. Let's go to Tsepo in Pretoria. You've got your headphones on. Tsepo, good morning.
Yeah, Clement.
Mm-hmm.
There's a strategy I think Makuduman and the lawyers are using.
Mm.
Remember, Makuduman is processed right now as a fugitive. She was arrested on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And that will make it very difficult for her to get a bail. Now, what they're trying to do is to nullify this current arrest so that even if state wants to charge her immediately after this is nullified, she can be arrested immediately a few hours later if the warrant of arrest is issued.
Mm.
But that will be better because that will be not an arrest and then she will be immediately eligible for parole because she has never been convicted for anything. So the strategy is really to get her out on the grounds of for bail, and that's really my view. Lastly, my brother, quickly, the Senzo Muiwa case. There are two people. We only hear of two people who were in the house. The intruders were two people, one with a gun and one who came in. Mm. I can't remember. Mm. But we said five people. Can somebody tell us where the three comes from?
Mm.
These other three guys, where they come from? Because everybody who came up to now told us about two people.
Yes.
In the house.
Yeah.
It's important that we find these other three. Where did they come from?
Yes, Tsepo. Thanks for asking that. At 10:30, we're going to start on the Senzo Meiwa case with Khomotso Modise. So, I mean, Khomotso, for me, in how I rationalize it, is when someone, let's say, there's Clement who is in South Africa illegally.
Yeah.
In my understanding of our processes is, I'm here illegally, I would be taken to like Lindela maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Lindela Center, which is where we take people who are here illegally before we deport them. And then we deport you. But if I'm from Nigeria, they're not going to call Nigeria to come get me.
Yeah.
It's a process that's within the jurisdiction of South Africa. And what happened with Makudumana is the deportation happens, but it's not Tanzania that deports her. It's South Africa that brings her here. So in a way, I understand the legal team's argument here that in normal processes, think about it. Tanzania finds this person who is there illegally. What do? The normal process would have been to take them to some center where they take people who are there illegally. And then they put them on, I don't know, they put them on a flight, on a bus to take them back to South Africa. The difference here is there were people that were ready to be handed over, these fugitives. Now, how does that become deportation?
And this is where the extradition and deportation question comes in, right? And how there's vast differences between what should happen between a deportation and an extradition. You're very correct. The Lindela Repatriation Center is a beautiful example because this is something that we see all the time. South African government then takes the people over and then they are processed in their country, whether they are wanted for crimes in their country and whatever happens. And that's what Home Affairs has tried to liken this to. So they've said that whether or not it was our own people that fetched them, they were officially charged on South African soil.
Mm.
Just like would happen in Zim. If you wanted in Zim for a crime, South Africa doesn't charge you here. They would take you over the border. Zim then takes you and charges you there. But the technicality here is in the how this was done.
Yeah.
So quite frankly, her argument then is then from the fact that they have moved to argue or to show the court that it was actually an extradition. They're then saying, according to extradition laws, they flouted their procedure.
Mm.
And one of the first things that they're citing is that I didn't appear in a court of law, which is a part of what would happen in an extradition process. They're saying I didn't appear in a Tanzanian court of law. And that already makes my extradition dodgy.
Yeah.
But of course, government insisting it was not deportation. An extradition.
It was deportation.
So you didn't have to appear.
And I wonder, with deportation, like if someone is found in this country illegally, do we take them to court? I mean, that's going to clog up the system.
Well, if they wanted for crimes here, even if you were to be taken back to Zim, if you wanted for crimes in Zim, you would then be, once you've been deported, you would be charged in Zim. And that's my understanding.
Zim, yeah.
Yes, anyone can call. I mean, people who are of better, they are professionals in this space. But my understanding of legislation is that once you, so you are declared an undesirable person in, yeah, the, in another country. So this is what government says Magudumana and Bester were declared as. They were not declared as criminals. They were declared undesirable, which means you're in our country illegally. We don't want
you
here.
Right? To be here.
But I can't hand you over to police according to our laws, right? Mm-hmm. Our international relation laws. So I can't hand you over to South African police because as the South African consulate there, we don't have the grounds to hand you over to police.
No,
we work with home affairs officials, immigration officials. So they're saying, that's why we sent an immigration official to fetch you. That's the only people that could officially receive the Makudumara and Bester.
And I wonder if that's the standard procedure. If Tanzania deports them, just sends them back home, or often they call the countries where they come from, home affairs officials, and say, come get your people here. We'll find out. The judgment is going to be on Monday, right, Homotso?
Yes,
Monday?
Judgment is on the 5th, on Monday. And
okay.
We'll learn the way forward.
All right. So after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines, we're looking at the Senzo Meyiwa case. It's 10:31.
Across the Desk with Clement Manyatela on 702.
It's 24 minutes before 11 o'clock. Khumutso Modise is our journalist at EWN, and she's just bringing us up to speed with two important cases right now. We're going to get into the Senzo Meyiwa case now, and I know you've got lots of questions around that, so keep them coming on the WhatsApp line, or you can give me a call. And we've just wrapped up understanding Dr. Nandi Pamakutumana's case, where she's challenging her arrest in Tanzania. I think I will put my head on the block, Komotso, and say, I actually think she's got a strong case.
Do you think?
I think she's got a strong case. The technicality is so important. I don't see how. And look, I mean, the government has already said the SAPS didn't play any role there.
Mm.
They didn't make that. They didn't execute that arrest.
Yes.
But there was a chopper that's already ready. And normally that's the process you follow when it's an extradition.
But
when
the
officials come.
The chopper went back. I must say, the chopper went back. This is according to Minister Aaron Mutsalid.
Yeah.
So the chopper was sent with the police. They said, listen, we're here to fetch our people. Home Affairs, well, not Home Affairs, but, you know, the Tanzanian authorities said, listen, we can't hand these people over to you as police. What we can do is that we can hand them over to Home Affairs officials.
Yeah.
The chopper then comes back. The SAPS chopper comes back to South Africa. And then that's when we see the chartered jet. Was it 1.4 million that we spent on that jet?
Yeah,
the jet then goes with Home Affairs officials. But her argument is that even on that jet, there were police.
Yeah, what are they doing here?
Yes. And she even says they were clad in uniform.
Yeah, okay. Let's wrap up this conversation with these voice notes, and then we'll get into the Senzo Meyiwa case. Prepare your questions.
Clement, I don't understand something with this Magudumana case and Thabo Bester. Didn't the cops go there to fetch those guys in under the impression that they might just escape to along the way back to South Africa when they are caught there by the police? The police there might not have enough resources, or they might bring them back by car, which the car can be hijacked at any time, and things can be sabotaged. So don't the police can play that card, that these people who are afraid that they could escape? We had to go there personally in our own capacity and pick them up. Thank you, Bongani and Tembisa.
Thank you, Bongs. And that's, of course, an argument that the state can put up to explain the presence of those police officers.
Hi, Clement and guest. This is very interesting. I want to ask your guest, how important is the element of intent when it comes to the police going to Tanzania to try and arrest Unandipa? So their intention was to arrest her. That's why they were there. It's only because the Tanzanian police refused to hand them over, or to hand her over to the SA police, that, you know, the Home Affairs official was sent. So I don't think the state has got a strong case here. They sent the SA police there with an intention to go and arrest her or bring her back home.
Thank you for your WhatsApps. I mean, can you base it on intent? they intended to do this, therefore, whether they did it or not.
No, that's not how things work, unfortunately, yeah. You know. And this is why this is such a learning curve for all of us, right? So I think for even the officials that effected the arrest, but also even for us as journalists, it's to understand that the nitty-gritties actually do matter. So the technicalities are important. How you go about effecting the arrest is important. And this was the main arguments there from Magudumana's lawyers. I mean, we heard Advocate Katz, is it Katz or Katz?
He
was arguing, saying, you know, quite frankly, this was all disguised. It was disguised as a deportation. That argument, I mean, essentially saying that means there was proper intent, you know, but that's not how the law works. Unfortunately, we need to be able to understand that there are processes that need to be followed. And under the pressure, I believe under the pressure that officials may have been under, they could have potentially flouted certain procedures.
And it was a lot of pressure.
Now, whether they are material, see, the courts will have to also rule on the fact that was the flouting material? But also, more importantly, the interest of justice here.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's fine. We declare her arrest unlawful. Let's say that is the case. Someone saying here, this is simple. They must just release her and rearrest her. But one of your listeners made such a sterling point to say, once they release her and then rearrest her, it changes the dynamic completely for bail application.
Mm-hmm.
Because now she's only facing Schedule 1 offenses. And those, in a court of law, at least in magistrate's court, the onus is then on the state to prove that she's not eligible for bail. It's no longer on her. Once the schedule goes up, she then has to prove to the state that she is eligible for bail. But if they can just get her charged just on Schedule 1 offenses, and I stand to be corrected, but aiding and abetting is a Schedule 1 offense. And she doesn't have any other previous convictions that are linked to this. So it's only a Schedule 1.
Yeah.
So now the state then will have, I know that there's a fraud charge, I believe, and I think there's also a tampering with the corpse. That may affect the schedule. But if it remains Schedule 1 offenses, then the state, the onus is on them to prove that she's not eligible for bail.
Hi, good morning, Clement. Maybe our South African police and government did a favor by going there to fetch her and arresting her as the South African police. Because, I mean, to get arrested in a different country, that is very bad. That some countries' prisons aren't for the faint-hearted.
So my question, Clement, is if she wants to be released, she wants to be released where? Because if she wants to be released, she's going to be released here in South Africa.
Mm.
And then be arrested again because she committed a criminality and it. So that's my question. If she's been released, she's been released to where? Because she still have answers to the crimes she's committed.
Yeah. Case in Kahis. Yes, yes. And we covered that a little earlier on. By the way, John Pellman sent me a message. Remember, I was asking in prisons, are there salons and who pays for that? And John says prisoners have commissary accounts to a limited amount where they can buy certain things. So maybe if Banali budget, 200 each, I don't know, for a week or whatever the case is. Makutumana was like, I'll use mine for that wonderful hairstyle, clearly. 17 minutes before 11.
Across the Desk with Clement Manyatela on 702.
Okay, let's get onto the Senzo Meyiwa case now. My goodness, how many years has it been?
Next year will be 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
And we still don't know for sure what happened when this Bafana Bafana and Orlando Pirates goalkeeper was gunned down. So the first question we got on this case, Khomotso, was from Tsepo, who wants to know. There are two people who are accused, well, who were in the house, right, to rob, and ultimately that ended, according to the version of the people who were in the house, that ended in the murder of Senzo Meyiwa. But then there are five people now that are standing in this trial.
Yes.
What's going on? Why? What's the two versus the five?
So it all comes down to something called the doctrine of common purpose. So what would happen is Clement and Khomotso decide they're going to enter a house Kamisteki, we kill Aben. But Clement and Khomotso were not the only people who were planning this crime. Clement, Khomotso, Karabo, and whoever else planned the crime.
Mm.
But it's only Clement and Khomotso who went into the house. If police and authorities can prove that they were acting and had colluded with other people, then they can charge them based on the principle of common purpose. And my understanding is that the three others in this matter were charged on the doctrine of common purpose. So they acted allegedly with the two intruders that entered that home.
Okay. Was it one gunshot or was it two? That's the big question.
Dumelo Mazala, who is Senzo Meyiwa's childhood friend, says one. Mtokozi Sithwala, who was Senzo's friend, close friend, says it could have been two. Zandi Khumalo, who is the sister to Kelly Khumalo, who was Senzo Meyiwa's girlfriend at the time, says she had three.
Hey, Bo, she says three?
Yes.
Evan, okay. This is going to be... But so far, is she the only one who has testified who was in the house and present?
No. Dumela Mazala was present. Sithwala was also present.
So these two guys were in the house with Bosenzo, with Bo Kelly Khumalo?
Yes. So there were people in the house. I believe in total there were seven. Count with me. Seven. It is Kelly Khumalo, Zandi Khumalo, Mtokozi Sithwala, Dumela Mazala. Eventually, Longo Twala arrives.
Uh-huh.
It is Kelly's mother, Gladness Khumalo.
Uh-huh.
Who am I missing? Yeah, it's, and Senzo. Senzo Meyiwa. So seven people were in this house.
See.
And then there were kids. There were children also who were present in the house.
But how can they be different versions of one, two, and three gunshots?
I mean,
I understand they were traumatized and they're trying to remember, but surely, at least, there must be one person who believes there's one, and then there's two people who believe there's two gunshots. But three versions?
So, you see, that's what happens when there is testimony from eyewitnesses, so to speak. This is from eyewitnesses, this is from people that were there. We do expect there to be some sort of, I don't want to say inconsistencies, but differences in the versions that are given, especially in a traumatic event. What would happen, though, is that the court has to decide whether these differences are material. So the fact that one person may have heard one, and then Mtokozi Sithwala says, listen, I'm certain that one went off because after that one went off, I ran out. But maybe there could have been a second. I think I heard a second.
Uh-huh.
The court can say, okay, we hear that.
Yeah.
At the point where someone says, I heard three and I was present in the house, the court needs to start thinking, are these material differences,
okay,
right? Of course, there would be other things that speak to gunshots in the house. There would be cartridges from a bullet, from the bullet, depending on the firearm that was used. There would either be markings where the gun may have gone off. All of that, really. And this is where ballistic evidence comes into play, and other forensic evidence will come into play once we hear testimony.
Okay, let's go to some questions from our listeners. Let's start here.
Hey, good morning, Clement. Good morning, Clement, and the 702 listeners. You are speaking to Survivor from Wattville. Clement, my question is one, bro. Sebata, my question is one. Kelly, bam mijaneng, koratlo araba lena. Atlatlo araba lena kirebelo. Why ena tsotsu bam treated special? Bam mijaneng lena tlo araba. Thank you, Clement.
Thank you, Khomotso. We can't treat Kelly specially.
Yes.
When is she coming?
Hey, Abuti Survivor. We also have the same question. You know, we are all waiting for Kelly to arrive.
I wonder what game she's going to play. If Zandi was already playing these dramatic games of...
Why do we believe it's dramatic? You know, I've been living this court case.
Yeah.
I've never felt this way in any of the cases that I've covered, where the people, the witnesses, the victims in this, and I don't want to put it in inverted commas because the state believes that they are witnesses, and that's the version that's being tested right now. It seems they are being tried here by the South African public.
Yeah.
I've never left a courtroom feeling like the people that are on trial are the victims and not necessarily those in the dock.
Here's what I think is dramatic. She goes on ENCA. She tells us every single detail of what happened on the day Senzo Meyiwa died on ENCA.
Yes.
She goes on Twitter and on Instagram, talks about this thing. She goes on their reality show, Yenali Kelly Khumalo. They talk about this thing. And then when it's time to say it under oath, oh no, keep me away from the cameras.
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. If this is someone who had, from the get-go, didn't do interviews, didn't post on social media about it, I would understand. But to come out now, after you've been plastered on TV screens talking so openly about the case and now for some reason you can't.
Yeah.
That's questionable to me.
That was the argument by Judge Maumela, really. So just to bring our listeners up to speed, there was an application that was brought by Zandi Khumalo. Initially, it was from the bar. So that means there weren't any formal heads that had been submitted.
Mm.
The state's advocate Baloyi just stood up and said, listen, the witness is here ready to testify, but she says she doesn't want the media to take videos or picture of her or even the audio broadcast of her testimony. Now, that then had to be, I mean, we spent about 4 days in that week. the last week that we had, just dealing with that matter. And what happened there is that, you know, the media lawyer argued against this, saying this is a person that has exposed herself to the media quite a bit, as you say. Not only had she exposed herself on ENCA and on other platforms speaking about this, but she has also been tweeting about it as the court matter has been going ahead. She'd taken pictures of herself at the court lifts, and she was responding to people, you know, I mean, to the point where she was even using some profanities while responding to people on Twitter who actually just wanted her to testify. So the court, and one of the major things that the court said was, how do you want us to protect you from social media when you seem like you're doing really well at protecting yourself? I mean, she, not only had she been tweeting, but she'd been almost swearing at people. And, you know, the argument was, you don't really need the court to protect you. You're doing a rather good job. Because Baloyi then said, no, but she's just protecting herself. That's why she's been responding.
What did you make of when she broke down and she pointed at one of the accused and said, do you know what you've put us through as a family? Honestly, I felt that. And I was moved with some sympathy because I was like, geez, like it sounded so painful, like and so real and so raw. What did you think of that observing? Because you could see her. Can't see her because we can only get her, you know, her sound.
Look, I mean, it was an emotional moment in the court. She pointed out Ubongani Ntanzi. Ubongani Ntanzi is the second accused. It's important to put this into context. So Ubongani Ntanzi, not only is he the second accused, but he's also, it's the second time that someone's pointed him out.
Oh.
So Tumelo Madlala pointed him out as well.
Okay.
Saying that he was the second intruder. And so in that moment, it was very interesting to see how she also pointed him out as the second intruder, the taller intruder. And Ubongani Ntanzi really does fit that spec, right? Taller, dark, the mustache, he fits it. So when she broke down for me, it was also very emotional. And I felt like, wow, I mean, you know, if what we're hearing is true, imagine what they've been through.
As a family.
Especially
because not only are they going through that trauma, but if it's found that these guys are the ones who did it, can you imagine the trauma of having been targeted as the perpetrators? Because people have looked at the family and said, you people did this. Yeah. One of you in that house, you killed this man. So if the courts find that one of the accused, one of these five accused, are the ones who did this, then, I mean, this family then has been put through the most.
Look, I must say this. Four of the accused have previous convictions. I think the fifth accused, Fisokuhle Ntuli, is actually facing or has been sentenced to a number of life sentences. I think about four life sentences. So, I mean, some people might ask, what does he have to lose, right? But it's interesting to see how all of them are adamant to be acquitted of this crime, even though they have other convictions. Accused number 4 and 5 are serving life sentences. Accused number 1, he is serving a 12-year sentence, I believe. And the third accused is also facing a charge. It's only the second accused, who's actually the one that's been pointed out, who has no previous convictions and isn't serving anything here. But it's interesting to see how these men that are still going to be in prison for very long, even if they're acquitted for this, are adamant to prove we did not kill Senzo Meyiwa. A lot is at stake here for them. I mean, one would argue, if you... the courts have proven that you are some sort of a career criminal, right? What people might know as inkabi, right? But they're insisting this is not the crime we're going to go down for. We didn't commit this particular crime, and there's no reason why we should be held accountable for this crime. And you see that, Clement, from the interactions that they have with their lawyers. I mean, you know, a lot happens when court is adjourned. I saw an attorney, Sipora Musipili, speaking to Ntanzi after he was pointed out, saying, don't worry, I'm going to deal with her for this.
Okay, let's take some quick questions. I've got a lot coming from our listeners. David, you are in Randburg. Hi.
Hi, Clement and the guest.
Sure.
You know what? This case is heartbreaking. I just wanted to find out from your guest, is the interview on ENCA, can it be admissible in court? Because that gives it away. That says it all. How do you identify a person wearing a balaclava as a person who was wearing a hoodie or whatever the case may be? The case is just flawed. So I want to know if that interview is admissible in court. Can it work? Because that's where the crunch is. for me personally.
All right, David, thank you for the question in Randbeck.
It is definitely admissible, David. And we've seen how social media videos, social media tweets, and even interviews that people have done on that Netflix documentary were brought into court and were quoted. I mean, Tumelo Madlala was questioned from the version of event that he gave from that Netflix documentary as well. So it is definitely admissible. And you're right, there are weird inconsistencies that I've also found to be really, really interesting. Like how in the ENCA interview, she says when she was asked by Slindolo Masilane, are any of the men in the dock, do you recognize any of them? She said, how could I? They had their faces covered more than half the time. It's interesting to see how she comes to the dock last week and she confidently points them out.
And yet on ENCA, she said, well...
Yeah, these are the same men that were in the dock when she did that ENCA interview.
Okay, another listener is asking about that docket number 2. What kind of nearly docket? What docket?
Yeah, 375.
375.
Yes.
Whatever happened to docket 375? Docket 375 was the one where Bokeli Kumalo and the people who were in the house are being accused of murdering Senzo, right? What happened to that?
So the last we heard, so remember, when 375 and Dr. 375 was brought in by Advocate Malisa Latefo, you'll remember the controversial Malisa Latefo, now disbarred, he told the courts about this docket saying, listen, there is a docket here that was compiled by your own people, NPA, that say that these people should be charged. We then heard from the director of public prosecutions in Pretoria, who then said, listen, that docket was compiled by a junior advocate. So we're essentially saying that wasn't the final, it was a draft, so to speak. But then the NPA then came out saying, we are parking it, and depending on the outcome of this particular matter, that's docket 629, I believe, that's before the courts currently, depending on the outcome of the current matter, we will then decide on 375. But very quickly, it's interesting because what happens now, Clement, is that with 375, where they are the accused, Kaylee and the people who were in the house, I almost find myself listening to their testimonies with caution because they are potential accused in a different docket. So you would be very cautious what you say on the stand in this matter in case that docket comes up and you're charged now as an accused.
Yeah.
That means the victims in this current matter are potential perpetrators in 375.
There was a point when Umandisa, who was, is it correct to describe her as Senzo Meyiwa's wife at the time of his passing?
Yes.
Zandile, during the ENC interview, asked that Mandisa, who was Senzo's widow, must also be cross-examined. Was there a suggestion that she may also have had something to do with this? And what's the likelihood that she may be brought in?
Not officially.
Yeah.
There is no official evidence before the courts. And I understand there isn't any being investigated either. I mean, potentially, we're not privy to police investigations. But at this stage, there's never been a mention of her being a perpetrator. I do know that many of us are we're inclined to consider who would want Senzo Meyiwa dead.
Mm.
And I mean, you know, the age old, the spouse, we always think it's either the husband or the wife. Mm. And I believe that may have been a potential reason for why people may say that. But Umandisa, of course, at the time of her death, of Senzo's death, wasn't present. She came to the hospital. She's also an interesting one because Tumelo Madlala told the courts that Mandisa was involved in a fight with Kelly Kumalo on that day at the hospital after Senzo died at the hospital. Mtokozi Sithwala came and said, no, Mandisa was right next to me. There were fights far there. He even says, Mandisa hugged Kelly and they were comforting each other. But now we heard from Zandi Kumalo now, who says Mandisa actually was part of that fight. She even pulled Kelly's hair out, her braids, straight back. Pulled the straight back out. You see?
Sure. Okay. Ooh, wow.
So there's different events here. Was Mandisa,
so
she couldn't have been comforting Kelly and pulling her hair out at the same time.
Yeah.
Someone's lying.
Someone is lying. Oh, wow. Khomotso. A says, hi, Clement. Khomotso is so clear. Thank you so much for bringing her to the show. She's really made us understand these things much better. Another person says, Clement, so happy to see Khomotso. Always hear the voice. Now, I think that's the video that Karabo posted. Yeah. So someone says she's got such a beautiful voice and her explanations has been great. So thank you so much for coming in. Good luck on Monday. We'll find out from your reports whether Nandi Pamakutumana will be released and whether there's going to be a rearrest or if she is going to be remanded in custody. Khomotso Modise, EWN journalist. Thanks for making time.
Thank you for